Well, the answer is very good. Okay. The yeah, that's a lot of times, like, people will find, you find people that they'll deny God because some bad occurrence happens to them. Say somebody that they love died or some serious tragedy occurs, right? But where were these people before? You've never heard of tragedies before? Never heard of a tragedy before? Hundreds of thousands of people lived through tragic lives. That didn't bother them. All of a sudden, now it affected them. Now suddenly they realize there's no justice. The answer is a person can live very comfortably in the confines of their own emotions. As long as, and they can get through life, a lot of people, that way. Yeah, and it's a nice feeling to live that way. But that was Eve before he had these Yisurim. Once he had these Yisurim, you see, then things opened up and he started to see a little bit across the board, a little bit of things, hey, just a second, what's going on over here? And his comfortable emotions were uprooted. You see? That's the situation. Now, to live on that level without, in other words, for an ordinary person to live on that level is very difficult. Most people will not remove themselves from that situation unless they have to, because it's nice and comfortable. See? Yeah, oh, wonderful. But Eve is coming now to show you that you are wrong in doing that. Now, if you look around, you'll see that that's not true. Now, let's go a little further. That's his argument. Okay. Now, what is the last part? The last part is a little bit difficult. Now, here you see another argument starting in Ches. In Pasuk 8, he's spinning a new argument. What's the argument over there? Go ahead, read it. 8.
Behold, I go forward, but he is not there, and backward, but I cannot perceive him. On the left hand, where he works, but I cannot behold him. He hides himself on the right, but I cannot see him. For he knows the way that I take, and he has tried me, I shall come forth like gold. My foot has held fast to his steps, his way I have kept, and not turned aside. Nor have I gone back from his command, from the commandments of his lips. I have treasured the works of his mouth, the words of his mouth, more than my necessary food.
That's right. See, he shows again. He shows how he. I don't know why he slips back up and back. He slips up and back into two arguments. First, he says, "I go forward to find God. He's not there. I turn to the right. He's not there. To the left, I can't grasp him." You see? But then he comes back and he says,
"I'm going."
What? Now he comes back and he says that if he tries me, I come out like gold. You see? He says, everything, if he tries me, bechonani kazovetze, I come out like gold. He says, and I kept every commandment he gave, and I treasured it more than my bread, more than my daily food. High level. See, now he goes back to the fact that he's just again. I don't know why he slips back, but go ahead, let's see the last part of the argument.
But he is unchangeable, and who can turn to him? And what his soul desires, even that he does. For he performs the thing that is appointed for me, and many such things are with him. Therefore I am terrified at his presence.
Ah.
When I consider, I am afraid of him. For God makes my heart faint, and the Almighty has affrighted me. Ah. Because I was not cut off from before the darkness.
That's right.
Nor did he cover the thick darkness from my face.
He's saying something interesting. You see what he's doing? Now he switches around. First he says he'd go to God. Not afraid, he'll tell God that he's just. I know what he's going to tell me, he has no answer. I'm right, and that's it. Now, in the end, you see, he changes. In the end, he changes. He says that he says, V'huv echad mi yeshivenu. He is one. He has his one way, and nobody can change him. And whatever he wants, he does. He says that he'll finish off what he started with me. And he says, therefore I'm afraid of him. Al kein mipon av bohel. I'm afraid of him as bonein ve'efchad mimeno. I think about it and I become frightened from him. See? V'keil herach libi. He says, God made my heart weak. V'shakai hevilani. And he made me frightened. You see? Because I wasn't cut off before the darkness. Because I didn't die before I lived through the Yisurim. You see? Okay. Now, what is all of a sudden? First, he's so certain, and now he's afraid. You notice the way he's turning? He's turning from the beginning of the argument to the end of the argument. It's a big change. First he's very confident, and now he's the opposite, frightened. What's the change? What is he saying? What's the change? First, he says that he's righteous. Then he says like this. He says, I go to the east. What's the pasuk? Ches? What's the translation? I go to the east?
I go forward.
I go forward. You say forward. Okay. Kedem. Alright. I go... yeah. Alright, whatever it is.
To
the east, right? Okay. Four directions. Yeah. He says, "Why? Well, I can't find him. I go east, he's not there. Right? I go left, and I can't grasp onto him. Yatof yamin v'lo eri. He turns to the right, and I can't see him." What is the pshat? What is he saying, really? What is he saying? He's saying one thing. He's saying that you see, ki yoda derech imodi, b'chanani kazov etzei. What does it mean? Because he knows. Ki yoda derech imodi means because he knows my ways, and he knows he's already tested me, and I went out like gold. You see, so that's why he avoids me. That's what he's saying. He's saying he avoids me because he knows that I'm right. He says, "Ba'ashuro ochas aragli darko shemati v'lo'ot," because then he goes back to how righteous he was. You see, mitzvas fasa v'lo amish mechuki tzafanti imreiviv. All right, I loved the words of his mouth more. I watched him more than food. What is the pshat? You see, yeah, he says God's warning because ki yoda derechimad, because he knows that I'm right, and that's why he avoids me. You see. And then he says, then the real turning point is Yud Gimel. V'hu be'echod umi yeshiveno v'nafsho ifso v'yos. What it means is like this. He means, you see, based upon, he's bringing his previous argument to its logical conclusion. The previous argument is that there is no escape. You see, he comes to the point where there is no escaping what the conclusions are. He knows that for sure, that there's no justice. God can never argue with me. So therefore, we have to say one thing. What do you have to say? If there is no justice and God can't argue with me, then you're going to have to say, and God is interested in justice, then you're going to have to say that God is avoiding me. Right? That's the natural conclusion. Natural conclusion is that God is avoiding me. Right? No. Well, he says that's definite. Because since I know, that's impossible to escape. It's really, I'll tell you what it is, actually. It's what they call, what philosophers call an ontological argument. This is really... A model of the ontological argument. This argument, the Eve's argument. An ontological argument means an argument which is proven from the individual itself. But it's not a subjective argument. It's a subjective argument which proves a thing objectively. You see, like the ontological. If you know the philosophers, the ontological proofs of God. Of Anselm and Descartes and Spinoza. By the very thought of, but you have to understand what that means. So they did mean something. It's not just a thing. But the point is, this is Eve's, an ontological argument is the safest argument, by the way. Because it's an argument, like this type of an argument, is an argument he's reasoning from himself outwardly. Now there's no way, there's no escape, because he becomes the measure of the situation, of the argument itself, you see, of the logic itself. And it's inescapable. Do you understand what I'm saying? In other words, he's saying, since it's an ontological argument which you cannot escape, then there's only one conclusion. The conclusion is that God is, since I'm right, so then God is avoiding me. I turn to the right, he's not there, he's running away from me. Right? That's what you must say. That's the next conclusion. Right? But then there isn't, but that, of course, Eve held is absurd. You see, the only reason he says it is because he is showing you the results of his argument. So you have to know an E of what he's doing. He's showing you the natural results of the argument. You understand what I'm saying? But that doesn't necessarily... In other words, what he's doing is, he shows you, based upon my argument, X should occur. Now, if X is absurd, then we have to retract and follow Y. You see? Therefore, he says like this, since my argument shows you that I am 100% correct, and there is no way out of it, because it's an ontological argument, therefore... What do we have to do now? We have to draw a conclusion. I'll show you a conclusion that comes from this argument. The conclusion is that God's avoiding me, right? But now he says, that is an absurdity, you see? That is an absurdity. So therefore, there's only one other conclusion. V'hu v'echad umi yeshiveno. That's the conclusion. You see? V'nafsho ifso v'yos. What does it mean? It means like, what does it mean? V'hu v'echad umi yeshiveno v'nafsho ifso v'yos. There's only one possibility. The possibility is that we have one mistaken premise. The premise isn't that I'm unjust. I am just. But God himself isn't concerned with it. You see? God is only concerned with it. God has his own will. He's not concerned with the justice that goes on earth. Do you know what I mean? And since that is the case, since he is not concerned with the justice that takes place on earth, you see? So he does what he wills. what he does what he wills means that his will is not related to me. His will is not related to me. His will is related to other things. His will, I am a result of those other things. You see? But the will is related to other things. Now that's what you must say, you see? Then he says, Kiyashlim Chuki Vachahena Rabos Imi. Interesting passage. Kiyashlim Chuki, what does it mean Kiyashlim? How do you translate 14? Go ahead.
For he performs the thing as appointed for me, and many such things are with him.
Yeah. He means like this. He means, you see the Mitzudis, the way the Mitzudis means, Hein Yadati Kiyashlim Bikola Yisurim Kefi Achol Kasher Gozer Alive, Allah Yisurim Yimene Bavor Koshadaki. I know that he will not take them away because I'm right. Even though I'm just, he's not going to take away those Yisurim. You see? The Chahena, Kamo Advar Masher, Osa Imadi, Ken Yesh Imo, Rabos in Yonam Kelasha, Yasel of Neodam. Just like it happens to me, it happens to many people. Which means, what does it mean? This is what I'm telling you. That God is not concerned. God's will does not relate to what? To man. His will relates to a higher sphere. You see? Those higher spheres, from those higher spheres that his will relates to, results different things. I happen to be a result of those things. But he's not directly related to me. Indirectly. You see? In other words, God created the universe, and the universe has certain laws, chance, whatever, different laws. I'm a result of these laws of chance, and God has nothing to do with it. God is too high. That's why he says, Al-kein mikonov e-bohel, es-bonein ve-efchad mimeno. That's why he becomes frightened when he thinks about God. Why? Because he realizes that God is so high, that God is on such a high level, that he doesn't even have anything to do with me. Then he feels behola, pachad. Because he can't relate to the Supreme Being who has no relationship to him whatsoever. Because God is related to... He's just a little accidental feature. A little dot on the crust of the earth which just happened to be accidentally occur that way. When he thinks about that, then he has the fear. Then he has a fear of Bahal and Pacha. That's right. Possible escape except through one or two things. He's showing you there's one or two possibilities. God's avoiding me. Or, in other words, God really recognizes I'm right. And that's why he keeps away from me, or else God has nothing to do with me. He's too high. That's the conclusion. I came upon of a boil. You see? We'll soon see. No. You can't say God's unjust. He just isn't. His will is above these things. We're little specks. Does God, if a little ant, if somebody steps on an ant, is God going to be concerned? He's not concerned with these things. He's not. That's not. It's a result of God, but God isn't concerned with us. What? It's not a question of justice, and he doesn't act justly. God isn't involved in the situation. He's not involved in the situation. If I'm not involved with somebody in China, am I unjust? Let me ask you a question. Why is that unjust? What's the injustice? Unjust means where there's a situation, I'm not involved in the situation.
God requires of you. He requires me to do something.
No. He doesn't require anything. He doesn't know. No, he doesn't require anything. Eve is maintaining now there's no requirements. God has no requirements. You're fooling yourself. This is your own thing. God has no requirements. He doesn't ask you. You are just like an ant on the face of the earth. No different. You follow your instincts and that's it. Everything can be explained instinctually, what you do. There is no such thing as real justice and that's it. There are a lot of people, that believe this way. A lot of people believe this way. Today's modern scientists believe that way. I say scientists, I don't mean that science in any way reflects such an idea. I'm just saying people who are scientists, who others look up to, you know, many of them, not all of them, many of them do believe their way. Okay? Yes? Not avoiding me is what they call reduction until absurdity. Reductio ad absurdum. That's a form of argument. It means if I show you an argument, I'll reduce it, the conclusion, I'll show you from a certain premise that you're going to have an absurd conclusion. The premise is that he is just. Premise one, he is just. Two, he has Yisurim. Right? Three, the third, the next thing that follows is that God is avoiding me. But it's based upon an assumption that God's involved in my justice. Reductio ad absurdum. What do you mean? If you are a judge, you want to change your judgment so you'll avoid the person that you'll avoid the defendant. You don't want to face him. That's what he's saying. And he's saying that that's an impossibility. So therefore he says, so you must say the other possibility. You have to be careful, Neve. You have to know what you have to understand. There's a lot of things here. Now, it's written in a way, Dibur Torah Lashmena means that the Torah is written in a way that an average person can read through, you know, but a person with insight has to be able to spot what's going on in these psukim. Sometimes it's an argument, sometimes it's a deduction, sometimes it's a conclusion. Yeah, that's the idea, is to unravel what the order is over here. That's what the order is in this. In this perek, the order is an ontological argument that can't be possibly refuted, irrefutable argument, because it's ontological, it's irrefutable. Second is what? Conclusion from that argument. And third is, since that conclusion is absurd, so you have to have another conclusion, an alternate conclusion. There are two possible conclusions. That's what he is saying. Okay. Madua mishakai lo nitzpenu itim. V'yodov lo chazi yomav. What does it mean, nitzpenu itim? Itim means, they all in the Farshim learn, itim means like this. Itim means, see, times are hidden from God. What does it mean, times? Times means the laws of chance. Laws of chance. Times. It means the first say Marechas HaShemayim, which means really Marechas HaShemayim means that God created one system, you see, the universe. And from the universe stem all kinds of things, all kinds of possibilities are being thrown out from the universe. And then they come together and something occurs. You understand what I mean? A fish happens to be swimming along at a certain time because the water was warm, and because the water was warm, another worm was coming. A worm was coming, and the fish ate the worm. All different things that occur. See, itim. Itim means times. Times means occurrences. Occurrences that take place just by chance. Chance occurrences. That's what it means. So now he asks. He says, "Why is it that these chance occurrences are hidden from God?" You see, the yodav lo chazu yamav.
Why do those who know him never see his days?
Really righteous. How come they never really see God's day? They never really see God's justice. You see? They never see the time, they never see the days that God really creates. But they always see the chance occurrences. Take a look at Masudas like this. Atahocha likvol islani al tevas rashayim. Valki shagam badaita loimar shakol toli bamarachas hashamayim. Asha shoftu beisai royim valedol. Azamar madua lo yiyu haros ha'itamahim. Nitzponiv in his time and echnom of Nea Makom. Ki me aroy ho yeshakulam yachad yishabu miponov. Velo yamru piv. Ki halo kol yode amakom in a chachom vanavim lo igbilu lo zman lo mashum achudashim olam. Okay? Alright. Vu mesada hamarach sashamayim. Maduam ken liim shobahem liyas nitzponiv miponov in echnom lo leval yi amashamar and bitamayim. What he's saying is like this. He's asking a question like this. He says it's true that God is above everything and God only has to do with the higher spheres. But why is it? Yes, one question, a philosophical question. The question is, how could you say that God created something which is outside of, which stands outside of his nature? Which means God's nature is just, right? Now these things that he created themselves should partake of the same nature that he has, which is justice. Therefore, there shouldn't be chance occurrences. Because everything that occurs from what he created. Let's say he created a system of the universe, right? And because of the system of the universe, different things occur. But the system of the universe itself should have an entity of justice implanted in it because it comes from him. How come those things don't have justice? That was his question. His question was that since God's nature is just, so then all those things which stem from his nature must also have that thing in it. Well, how come? Why is it that the Marechas HaShemayim, Marechas HaShemayim refers to the universe? Why is it that the universe doesn't have in it a system of justice? You see, we don't find justice in the universe, and yet it comes from him. So then, that's and his nature is just. Do you notice there are many, many Chazal which try to impress upon us that the universe has a system of justice? You know, many Chazal which are trying to impress upon us. Chazal, for instance, about the Shemesh and the Yireach. They said they were arguing with each other, and then God said, "By Yom Balayla." You know what I mean? Smart. All these things, a lot of Chazal that want to show, that try to convey to us that there is justice in the, there's an element of justice in the universe. Yeah. And somehow in the universe, a system of justice embodied there. Okay, what that means is not that easy to understand. But here's what Eve is saying like this. Eve is saying is that since the universe results from God, and God's nature is just, so the universe itself, the Marechas HaShemayim itself, which are responsible for everything that occurs, should themselves have in them a system of justice. How come then, that's what it says, why aren't they afraid of him? Madumi shakai lo nitzpinu, why don't they hide from God? Why don't they show deference to God? Why aren't they afraid of him? Why do they have their own system? It's as if there's a system which is created extra God. outside of God, because God himself is just, and yet this system which is created by him doesn't have any element of justice whatsoever. Like people say, it's a cold, cruel world, which means there is no justice, there's no sense of justice in the universe. Just cold, logical system, you see? That's his argument. How could that be? How could that stem from a God whose nature partakes of justice? You see? That's his next question. That was his question. That was based upon the previous conclusion. The previous conclusion was that God is too high. It's true that he's too high. But the point is, isn't it true that those things that he created stem from him? Then they should have partake of his nature. How come they don't partake of his nature? That's his question. Yes. Now that's true. See, if something depends how what the relationship is. If something is produced if one essence is produced from another essence, then that essence which is produced from it has to partake of the first essence. Has to have the first essence in it. Yeah, it has to be. It has to be that way. If it has nothing to do with the essence, an accidental thing, then you're right. If you just knock over a tree, in Hanami. But if a tree produces another tree, then that second tree will have the characteristics of the first. If it stems from the essence of the thing, it has to have it. If it's just an accidental thing, you're right. But that's an accident that a storm knocks over a tree. You see? But if in Hanami, that's a good way to put it. And if God, since God is good and things come from God, so how can a thing come from God that is evil? How can a thing eventuate from God that's evil? Even though you tell me God isn't concerned with it, primarily. But the point is, it eventuated from God. And God was, God you tell me is just, God is good. So how could something eventuate from God which is unjust? If the source was justice, if the source was good. The world, if it's how is it possible to exist in the world? If it all comes from God and God is good, okay? Above everything, God is not concerned with me directly. But now the point is, so he's not concerned with me directly. Fine, but he's concerned with other things, right? But those other things stem from him. Those other things must have in them justice. And if they don't have justice, then how do they stem from his essence? We have to have doubt now, yeah. Now Chav Dalet, I want you to read through Chav Dalet, but Chav Dalet really contains only one thing I told you, in every case, he shows a personal argument and he supports it with an objective argument. Alright? Now over here he's going to support it again with an objective argument. A different objective argument than the one he had last time. Go ahead. I'm saying, Yaakov, did I answer your question?
Yeah.
In other words, you can't say that
it's
right. Lives. So a lot of times people will resort to that when they don't understand something. They say, well, I don't understand God, that's it. But they never think really that if that's the case, they don't understand God's justice, so then why are they trying to act justly all the time if they don't understand it? Do you know what I mean? They don't stop to think about that. It's just at certain times they say, well, this I don't understand. But they're contradictory. See? That's the point. Eve is not contradictory. Eve is synthesized. He's organized. Okay? That's the difference. Okay.
The way the ass of the fatherless.
He's talking about the Rishoyim.
Right. They take the widow's ox for a pledge. They turn the needy out of the way. The poor of the earth hide themselves together. Behold, like wild asses in the desert, they go forth to their work, rising bedtimes to work for food. The wilderness yields food for them, for their children. They reap the corn of the field, and they glean the vineyard of the wicked. They lie all night naked without clothing. And they have no covering in the cold. They are wet with the showers of the mountains.
Right.
And embrace the rock for want of shelter. These pluck the fatherless from the breast, and they take a pledge of the poor, who go naked without clothing, and that they carry the sheep, and they that carry the sheep are hungry. They also make the oil within the olive rows of the wicked. They tread the wine presses and suffer thirst. Men groan from out of the city, and the soul of the wounded cries out. Yet God lays no blame on them. They are of those who rebel against the light. They know not its ways, nor abide in its paths.
The Pray through Chav Dalet.
Because it looks a little funny. First he talks about how the Russia is Matzliach. He talks about Hatzlachas or Russia. He talks about all the things that the Russia does. Descriptions of all he does. He hides in the night. He kills the poor man. He escapes by day. He runs away in the waters. He's swift. He's fast. He gets away with everything. But then it's interesting. Then in the end he says like this. In the end he says that just like the heat melts away the snow, he says, so the grave takes in the wicked. And he says also, he says, evil is broken like a tree. He says, people forget him. Evil is broken like a tree. It sounds like on the contrary, that God really does
take care of him.
Nah. What he means like this. Now, what he means is like this. He means he's trying to show the injustice from another aspect. He's showing that the Russia escapes, the Russia does everything he wants in this life, and he dies suddenly, which is a good thing, which means he doesn't suffer. You see? It says, when he says, Yishkacheu rechem mesako, mesako rima, od lo yizacher, he says, the worm forgets him, the worms eat sweetly on him, he will not be remembered, and he's broken like a tree. That's Pasuk Chaf. Now, what is he trying to show you in Pasuk Chaf? He's trying to show you one thing, that he didn't, the Russia didn't suffer, live through pain for everything he did. On the contrary, he died suddenly. He did not say this. Before he was speaking about the fact that the Russia has a good life. By the way, if I thought of somebody that would really fit into Eve's framework perfectly. No. A Russia that really made it and got away with everything. If you want to have an example for Eve, John D. Rockefeller. That's the man. Really. The man was a murderer. He actually killed men, women, and children. Man actually murdered people. Killer. They had to hire people to go kill him. When there was a strike in the mines, there was miners' families, 14 miners' families. He wiped them out. They had them destroyed by hired assassins. And the man goes down, died 96 years old, 97, something like that. Very old man. Great philanthropist, coveted honor to this day. His name isn't really bad, isn't associated with bad. Rockefeller, his children famous, right? There's the case. That's one of Eve's case. That's a good case. John D. Rockefeller, that's the case. The man was a murderer. Killer. Murderer. Okay. Now, but over here he's not talking about the Hatzlacha of the Russia. He's talking about the fact that the Russia doesn't suffer. That's what he talks about. You see? In other words, his argument is, it's really an answer to who's Taina before, really. It's an answer to the Taina of not Eliyahu, Bildad. Because Bildad's Taina was that there's a retribution system. A tzaddik suffers, but he gets paid back. And now he says, but the Russia, so you'll tell me that the Russia's Matzliach, fine. But where's the repayment? He dies suddenly. People don't remember him. When he says I don't remember, it means I don't remember how he suffered. Because when a person sees somebody suffering, it leaves a lasting impression on his mind. But the Russia dies suddenly, gets shot, he dies. Fast, quickly he dies, and he doesn't suffer. That's the argument that he's using. It's a different argument than he used before. Before was an argument against how could the Russian Matzliach. This is an argument against Bildad, against Bildad's original argument. He supports it, and it's supported from his own life. On the contrary, he says I go through suffering every day, and I'm a tzaddik, and the Russia does not go through the suffering that I go through in any way. But he dies suddenly. Last thing is, Bildad, Chafei, 25. Yeah.
Then answered Bildad the Shuhite and said, dominion and fear are with him. He makes peace in his high place.
Now what did he answer? Hamshel v'facharimo, ose shalom b'mromo. Something we say all the time. Ose shalom b'mromo, v'yase shalom aleinu. He's addressing himself to one question of Eve. Which question of Eve is he addressing himself to? Bildad the Shuhi. What is Bildad answering him? Bildad just asked the one question. Which question? What was the question? The question was, how could evil result from God's good, from God who's good? And what does he say? He says, no, it doesn't. He says that Ose Shalom B'Mromov, that's what it means, Ose Shalom B'Mromov. It means he sets up good, the good is set up in its higher places. And from there, it filters down to earth. You see? That's right, that's what he says. Ose Shalom B'Mromov. And he makes, God does not deal directly. It seems that he maintains that God does not deal directly. God deals with Bildad. God deals with the higher spheres, you see? And from the higher spheres, it filters down to us, you see? That's what he says.
Is this him saying our perception of evil is really, ultimately, what we perceive as evil is really meant, it's present to the ultimate good?
No, that's not what he's saying. But I don't understand what his answer is. Good, fine. It's like he's just negating what he said. He said that God doesn't have anything to do with us and that evil occurs. He says, no, God does impress evil. God does impress the good on the upper spheres. Okay. Now, what is I want to say like this. Umay Dalit, Pasuk Dalit.
And upon whom does not his light arise? How then can there be justified?
No, Pasuk Dalit. Chafei Dalit.
a fake doubt. Uh-huh. How then can man be justified with God?
Right.
Or how can he be? Or how can he be clean that is born of a woman?
Right.
Behold, even the moon has no brightness,
right,
and the stars are not pure in his sight.
Right.
How much less man that is a worm?
Okay.
And the son of man.
What is his answer? What's his answer? So he says, "Oh, so shalom b'mramav." So God makes peace in the higher places, right? Good. But then he goes and he says, but man is not really just. Even the yareach, even the moon and the stars are not just in his eyes. Certainly not man, who is a worm. Okay? But what is the the son of man is a maggot. What is his answer? I really don't know. I mean, we'll leave it for next time. I don't know what Buddha's answer is. I don't understand what he's answering. I only see he's answering to one. He's addressing himself to one thing, namely the idea that that God only works with the higher spheres. He agrees that God only works with the higher spheres, but he says that the spheres do yield to God's will. And from there filters down. Now, what kind of an answer is this? Matter of fact, the Evan Ezra is. Evan Ezra is. But he says, and the evil is on the ground, on the earth. And that's it. At large was created for its own purpose, not for man's purpose. And just like God created man, he created other things. We're not the only ones that exist.
It could be other worlds.
Yeah, other worlds. It could be other worlds or whatever you want to call. Yes, by the big thing. Osa shaham shava fachad imo, osa shalom b'mromov. Actually, it seems to me that Bilder Ashuchi's answer is like a summary. It's a very short one. It's like a collective answer. Collective answer. What he was saying is like this. It's a summary and a collective answer. Osa shalom b'mromov means like this. It means that we see that in the high places he makes peace. What does it mean? The high places he makes peace. In other words, in terms of the universe. You see in the universe that everything works with an order and a system, that God does not tolerate disorder. So he says, now therefore you see that the God of the universe, just like the God of the, you see that God of the universe doesn't tolerate disorder. That's a fact, that there is no such thing as just chaos. But everything is orderly, so therefore there cannot be any chaos with regard to man's life as well, since this too is a part of his creation. That's his conclusion, you see? And that's why we mispah, we say, Osa shalom b'mramav, hu yasa shalom aleinu. That's a shot. Because we cite the universe as an example of as a concrete example of the shalom, and we say that he should make the same justice among us. You see, that's the it's a cosmological analogy, see? Analogy to the cosmos. You have the same thing, a similar thing you have by the one bracha that's considered Kabbalas Ol Malch Shemayim, the bracha of Kiddush Levana, right? You also have that same thing, because you say. All about the celestial system. See, which means that there's an analogy between history and between. And between the universe, that perfection must eventually there is a system over here, just like there's a system in the universe, there's a system on earth also. So teres teferes lamusei vatan is quite so shehema sim leschadish kemoso, just like the levana works with a system, so too there's a historical system as well. So there's an analogy between the cosmos and between man's life. And that's what really Bildad Ashuchi says. Bildad argument is like this. You see that the God of the universe does not tolerate disorder. And just like he doesn't tolerate disorder insofar as the cosmos is concerned, he does not tolerate disorder insofar as human affairs is concerned. Nothing, there is, then it says like this, Hayesh mispar ligdudov, right? Va'al ni lo yakum areho. It means it's just like over there are so many particulars. So you see, insofar as all the particulars of the universe, you see that there's an order. There is no mispar l'gdudav. It means all the celestial beings, hundreds, thousands, millions, billions, right? And yet they're all unified and follow a certain order. So too over here, God knows all the particulars on earth, and they're all unified. There's no difference between the unification of particulars in the heavens and the unification of particulars on earth. That's what he means. That's his argument. So then the question, of course, is if that's the case, you have Eeyore's question, right? And he gives one answer. The strange thing in Bildad is that he gives really not his answer, but he gives Eliphaz's answer. He gives Eliphaz's answer. His answer was always compensation, but he doesn't give the answer of compensation. Why he retracted from that answer is hard to say. But for some reason, that's what's unusual here, that Bildad goes back to Eliphaz's answer. And the answer that he gives is Af ki enosh rima. He says Umay yitzdak enosh im keil Umay yizke yilurisha. So what does that answer basically say? It says that in reality, insofar as man is concerned, the only reason why really there is an order here, but the only reason why we don't see the order is because we do not know who is just or not. Man does not know who is just, and that's why if we would know who is just and if we'd know God's justice, then we'd see an absolute order. But the thing is, we have no knowledge of who is just, you see. And Eeyore is saying that he is just, so Bildad just simply cannot accept that. That's it. Cannot accept it, because he says, in other words, Bildad rejects the idea. Eeyore is absolutely, cannot be. It's an impossibility to say. Of course, no one can really know what goes on in the psychology of an individual. So Bildad's argument against Eeyore was that Eeyore was wrong. There was some emotion, some barrier, something was within him wrong that made him, whether he was unjust. You see? And he said, I can't see what it is. Of course, it's impossible for me to know. But there is something evil in Eeyore. And Eeyore fails to recognize it. But this we see, he says, that there's a law of the cosmos and there's a law of man. Just like there's a law in the cosmos, there's a law in man. And therefore, he says it's impossible to say that God is unjust. That was the final, actually, I think it's like a summation, you know? He finalizes everything in this one little peric. This is what we see, and this is what we know, and that's it. Okay. What? That really, God makes sure that every individual for the person is a tzaddik, that definitely the whole system will change for him. Right. Eeyore, there's something wrong with Eeyore, and we just can't accept it. That's it. That's what he said. He can't accept the evidence. Because he could say, insofar as he is concerned, there's only a certain amount that he could do. So he could always say that this is as much as I know. I know I can't do any more.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I know I can't do any more.
Is that just?
That was Bildad's. Bildad Ashuchi summed up the whole Taina. This is what we see. We see clearly there is justice, and that's all there is to it. Eeyore, we cannot accept. Eeyore's phenomena we cannot accept. In other words, when you see a man suffering, there must be something wrong. The man did not try hard enough, or there's some evil within him that he overlooked, right? What is the Torah's view about that? How do you answer this question? You know what the answer to this question is? The Sefer Aviv. The Sefer Aviv is the answer. See? The Sefer Aviv says it's not true. That's the whole Sefer. The Sefer Aviv says to you that there can be a man like that who suffers. See? That's the Sefer. In other words, how would we know actually whether this is possible or not? We would always be in the same situation as Bildad. Because if we see somebody, we always say, well, look, you can never know. Must be there's something wrong there. So it cannot be that there's an individual that really tried his utmost. And I mean the person really tried his utmost with reason, and he really planned everything, and he saw that this is the utmost he could do. And the man was a tzaddik and a yasher and a real akim and so merah. So you'll say, if that was the case, he can't suffer. When you see a person suffer, there must be something over there. It must be something that he's... And that's what Bildad and the other Chaverim, Eliphaz and so forth. That was the conclusion they came to. Their conclusion was that we have to accept what we see, and we see the order in the universe, and we see order on earth, and these people who suffer, the tzaddikim, we must say, it's because there really is something, something is there, a puzzle, you see? Now, the Torah, but the Sefer of Eeyore says it's not true. That's the whole Sefer.
That's a what?
Was the Sefer, otherwise there'd be no purpose in the Sefer says there was such a man like that, and nevertheless he did have all these tzaras. So therefore it's not true, that thesis is not true. Yeah, this does not hold that thesis, that if somebody is suffering, you must say that he didn't really try enough, or he's not really honest with himself, or he's really something wrong. See, that's what the Sefer via stands in evidence against that. Interesting thing. Exactly, of course, it means you can't say if a person has onshim and yisurim that he didn't do. You cannot say that it means he didn't do what he was supposed to. Practically, now this remains. Now, once you accept that, now you have a tremendous philosophical question. Once you accept that, so if there is such a phenomena, then you have a tremendous philosophical question. And that's what the Sefer really is going to answer. The end of the Sefer will answer. Add such a thing up. Interesting, huh? Offering, and there's something. They don't know about Eve.
Just don't see it, but the guy's definitely doing something.
You don't see the guy's doing something. He's not completely honest. Not completely honest with himself, with others, whatever it is. Man is definitely doing something wrong. Himself is not through torture. That's a lovely guy said, a Christian way. Yeah, we say according the way an organism perfects itself is on the contrary, is living according to the best possible way. Torture is not a way of perfecting an organism. Okay. So he answers directly Bildad's answer. He says, you may have an answer for yourself, but in no way did you help me. Okay. Because I remain with the knowledge of the fact that I did do my utmost. And therefore, in no way, that's why he says, how did you help the one that has no strength? He says, you didn't help me at all. In other words, you, of course you can maintain for yourself that this is the way it is. But me, you cannot help. All right. What? So let's answer another point. What do you say? Bildad said, Osa Shaham Shiel Fachim Osa Shalom Mamra Vayesh Mispaluk Dud Valmila Valmila Yakam Arayo. So really, so Bildad was speaking about the greatness of God and his order in the universe. So Eve says, yes, I certainly accept that. I accept the greatness of God, even to even to a greater degree. I understand the greatness of God. You see? And that's why he says, Hein Eila Ketzais Durachav. This is only a part of his knowledge. Ram Gurus of me is Bonon. Who really can understand the whole knowledge? He who has knowledge of the universe sees not only that he sees the great order of the universe, but he sees that he can even see from that order there's another order behind that which he doesn't comprehend. That's what he says. So he says, so really, in terms of appreciation of God's wisdom and his knowledge, I have a greater, as much appreciation at least as you do. I'm not arguing at that point. You see? Osa Shalom Bim Roma. But now he goes on. Vayosef Yiv Seis Mishalav Yoma. But what's the next step?
God. As God lives.
That would be. See, the thing is like this. Many people feel that people think it's a virtue to admit that one is wrong. And refusal to admit that one is wrong is really is not being virtuous. You see?
It's
when, exactly. That's what Eve said. Eve said, I stubbornly refuse to admit that I'm wrong. Why? Not because I refuse to admit I'm wrong, but because of my love of the truth. That's right, because of my, not from ego, from my love of the truth. And my love of the truth demands. That's why it says, "In to daber nos fasei avlo l'shoni im yeger remiya cholila liyematzik eschem aregvak lo osit tamasim many." I'll never. It fits them together. He says, because most people are just tied to certain emotions, that to admit that you're wrong is good, and not to admit that you're wrong is bad. So therefore, they're working with this emotional thing. My emotions aren't attached to that. My emotions are attached to one thing. Avla Ramiya, that I shouldn't say anything that's not true. And since that's the case, and I love the truth so much, I could never, till my last breath, will I never admit that I was wrong, because that would be a denial of the truth. That's what you're saying.
We're a paragraph, not yet.
Of course, the hypocrites, because they don't really accept the... he mentioned to them, he said to them, that was one of his accusations, that the reason why they cannot accept him is because they themselves... Yeah, at the beginning. That was one of the arguments he used. That they're afraid. Yeah, they're afraid to accept this. They're really being hypocritical. That's why they won't accept it. That was one of the arguments in the past. So he says, if a person does that, then he's turning away from justice. He says, the reason... What was exactly... I don't accept my case is because you don't want to admit that you have the problem. That's right.
They want to believe...
Yeah, I maintain, you see, just like they maintain that Eve didn't know what was wrong with him, he maintained that they really objectively should have accepted the facts that he gave them. See? And the reason why they didn't accept was because of their own emotions. And their emotions were that they couldn't tolerate such a situation. So therefore, they're flattering God. He says, and this God will not accept, because you're just flattering him with lies. You're not really being, it's not really an honest investigation. You're not coming to an honest conclusion. There's a mutual accusation on both sides. See, Eve accused them of being dishonest, because it says they couldn't tolerate such a situation, so therefore they couldn't accept it, and they in turn accused him. And that's why really when God said that you didn't speak well to my about my servant Eve, what God said really was that he was right. Of the hypocrite when God takes away his soul, but Eve maintains that God doesn't hear anybody's cry. Interesting. Go ahead. It was a philosophy, right? Go ahead. The question is, what is Eve saying, really? All of a sudden, Eve seems to be saying the opposite. Before he He actually, what kind of philosophy did he lay down? Like the Rambam says, it was Aristotle's philosophy. Yeah, God has nothing to do with the sublunar world, but it works according to chance. That was the argument. But now he seems to be saying no, that there is some type of justice. The Russia gets destroyed, gets cut down. All this, what is he saying over there? I mean, it seems like he's contradicting his own philosophy, right? This is the thing that really seems disturbing. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, all right.
And now he's saying that the Russia really gets it?
That's what he seems to say. Now the Ramban says, I checked the Ramban, there's a Ramban on here. The Ramban seems to say that the Pshat, he also is disturbed with the same problem. Ramban says that the Pshat over here is that Eve is saying over what they say. He's saying over what they say, and he's saying in essence that it's worthless. That it's not true. It's not true. But the only thing is we don't find this. What I don't like about the Pshat, we don't find it in the arguments. What is he? There's no refutations. If he's saying over there, but the Ramban of course learns that it's going on before. Just like before he says all these words are nothing, and matik vaschonev ki yivtza. So it's like all nonsense, and he's quoting over the nonsense. But why should you repeat all this nonsense? I find the pshat difficult. I was thinking of another pshat, and I found it later in the Mitzudas. Mitzudas says the same pshat. Pshat is like this. Really what Eve is doing is, Eve is saying as follows. You see, first he says like this. He answered them like this. He says, I want you to know, you mentioned about God's greatness because of the celestial system. Yes, I want you to know that I also recognize that, and perhaps even to a greater degree than you do. All right, now he's summing up his philosophy. Now he's saying like this. And I also, it says, Vayosef Yisayis Mishal Vayomar. He says, I also maintain that a person should do good, even though I say there's no justice in the world. But still I... You see, the greatness of Eve was that it wasn't emotional. In the sense that he wasn't emotional, in the sense that he didn't just go like a person, the average person gets a clap, something happens to him, so he becomes irreligious, like he's trying to get back at God. He gets caught up in these infantile emotions, you know? Eve didn't get caught up in those emotions. Eve was able to look at the situation and just say clearly what the right thing to do is. So he said, look, he says, I maintain that there is no justice in the world. Nevertheless, I would never say that a person should be a Russia. You see? And first he gives it to them. He says, you people are chanifim, right? Like I told you before, that's what he says to them. And he says, and what happens to a person who is a Russia, like you are, a chanif, or a Russia? And he goes into the thing and he says like this. He says, what happens is, he goes into the life of the Russia. He says, the life of the Russia really is the worst life. Why? Because, first of all, he says like this. He goes through all the destruction that befalls the Russia. And he maintains that destruction will befall the Russia. But why will destruction befall the Russia? Destruction will befall the Russia not because God will intervene with his justice. Not from external reasons, but from internal reasons. You see? Which means that a Russia is an individual who essentially will not accept reality, but is an individual who attempts to project his own emotions onto reality. But this will not work, and eventually he has to fail. Eventually he has to be miserable. So what Eve says is that I do not maintain that the right life that a person should choose is the life of a Russia. Because the life of a Russia is really the worst life. He will never be successful. He's speaking on the whole. He's not saying that there can't be Russia can't be saved, like I told you to mention, like Rockefeller. Yeah. But the point is that the Russia can never really be a satisfied individual. Why? Because since he is an individual who does not seek to find out what the reality of life is and adjust himself accordingly, but rather he attempts to impose a reality, his own reality, on the external world, it won't work. He has to fail. It's impossible. Inherently, his premise is wrong. The Russia starts from his own nature and attempts to organize the outside world according to his own needs. This is impossible. The only rational thing for a person to do is to see what the reality is and to yield and work within the framework of that reality. But Russia is not interested in reality. So that's why what happens is he's going to fail. That's why, like Hitler, Mashamay failed with Russia because he couldn't withdraw. So the one emotion, even though a person like Hitler really wasn't Stam a fool, he was able to subvert many emotions to accomplish his goal. In the sense that it appears that it gives the impression of a rationale. But the truth of the matter is that all these reasons were only for one emotion. That emotion was that he was he identified himself with a Superman. You see, so therefore, when rationality required that he withdraw, you see, rationality required that like they say, the retreat, when rationality required retreat, he couldn't do that. Because that was the underlying emotion, which was driving him. So therefore he went down. See? The point is, the Rasha is a man who has one, who does not accept the accept reality from without and try to adjust himself to, but he tries to adjust everything to his reality. Once he's operating in that and on those premises, he has to fail. And therefore, what Eve is saying here is that I do not maintain that a person should live an evil life. You see, that's why he says Hatzakoso Yishma Kel Kisovo Olof Tzora. What he means is like this: he doesn't mean to say that God won't listen to the Rasha, but will listen to the Tzaddik. He means the Rasha is the man of Taivas, the man who just wants to have what his emotions want. Now, but the point is, he's going to come in conflict with reality, because his system doesn't operate from reality to himself, but operates from himself to reality. So he has to come into conflict, because he's going to base everything on his own emotions. So he says, now what happens when he comes into conflict? Is God going to adjust the world for him? He's not going to. So therefore he has to fall. That's why he starts off that way. Then he says like this, Imal shaka yisanog yikra laka b'chaleis. He doesn't even have the Russia, doesn't even have the satisfaction. So first of all, he can't be Mesaneg al Hashem. He can't even enjoy. He doesn't have that enjoyment of the knowledge of the of God, because this is far away from him. You see, he doesn't have the knowledge of God. And also, Yikro L'Kaba Chaleis. He certainly is not going to be a person who will... Yikro L'Kaba Chaleis means, at least if a person is a tzaddik, so at least he has the ability to call, to pray to God, you see. But he doesn't even have that. So he doesn't even have that satisfaction of Yikro L'Kaba Chaleis. You know what I mean? He doesn't have the satisfaction of Yikro L'Kaba Chaleis. But the point is, what Eve is saying is, one thing, that the Russia will definitely meet with doom. You see? But you'll notice he doesn't mention about the Tzaddik. You see? That he doesn't mention. No, because it comes out like this. It comes out, the life, I do not say, he says, that a person should live the life of Russia, because he'll meet with doom. You see? But what I do say is like this. But nevertheless, I say that a person doesn't necessarily mean that if a person lives the life of the tzaddik, that he will meet with success. See?
Right.
So that doesn't work. Really, it's interesting. Now you can see why the Rambam says that Eve's philosophy, you see why the Rambam says that Eve's position is Aristotle's position. Because that's basically what Aristotle held. Aristotle held that it is true that Aristotle will be the first one to tell you to live the life of justice. Why? For yourself. Because that's the life of reality. You see? The life of study, the life of knowledge. These are the best things for man. All the things that Torah mentions are the best things for man inherently. Never mind because of God's justice. You see? But it still does not mean necessarily that if a person does that he will definitely have a good life. Because certain particulars can come along and destroy him. That you can only say if you have Ashgacha. See? And that's why Eve says, I still say that a person should live the life of the tzaddik, because it's the best life, and life of the Russia is doomed. However, what? It's not doomed because of an external force. No, not in general. In particular also, every case has to be that way. A person who lives the life of the Russia has to be doomed. You see? Yes. The only way they succeed is, they succeed in terms of their, that they're not happy. It's very simple. It's because the only way a person could be happy is when he's in line with his instincts, and when he's in line with when he's in line with himself. I shouldn't say instincts, his inner drives. When he's in line with his own psychological nature, which is in line with nature itself, with the external world. That's the only way that a person can be happy. You see? If one of those two things is failing, then he cannot be happy. Now the point is, a Rasha is not an individual who really takes the time to study what the nature of life is and to abide by it. What he attempts to do, he just follows an emotion and tries to project life according to the way he feels, not according to the way it really is. So therefore, inherently, he can never be happy. That's really what he's saying. Do you know what I mean? One second. So therefore, inherently, he can never... It's impossible. It's an impossibility. See, that Eve says... Yeah, because... Of course. Because his emotions, unless his emotions would naturally be what reality is... See, then he'd be happy. But the fact is, man's emotions aren't what reality is. Man's emotions have a different source. So therefore, since they have a different source, they're not aligned with reality. So either he's going to undo them and revise his whole makeup, which is a tzaddik, or else he's going to just try to follow those emotions and change reality. Now, it's a hopeless task to change reality. It's an impossibility. He just can't do it. First of all, he doesn't even know reality. He's never even studied what it is. So he's going to get hit. He's going to come across something which he's not even going to realize, and boom, he's going to get hit. That's what he means. That's what he means. Somewhere along the line. But when he was arguing before, he was saying that they were looking at it in a simplistic way, that the Rosh always gets killed by the sword, you know, and this one. That, he says, isn't true. We see many Rishayim will live to ripe old ages, you know. But the point is, right, it's impossible. They can't ever be happy because they have to come in conflict with the with reality. And see, that has to be that way. That's a happiness argument, right. That's his argument. That's why he says, I do not say that a person should be unjust, should be a Russia. I say the Russia is doomed, but I still do not see the other point that you're saying. You see, that's really the difference between the philosopher's approach to goodness and between Yadis's approach to goodness. The philosopher's approach to goodness is a person should be good. Because if you're evil, you're doomed. But it does not mean that if you're good, that you definitely will have a good life. That's a separate thing. Because certain particulars can come across and crush you. Whereas according to Yadis, we say no. We say that it's not true. We say that a person who... Both are true. The evil have a bad life, and the good have a good life. If you're a philosopher, or if you're in the evil's position, you'll say the evil have a bad life. And you stop there. But the good do not have a good life. And that's why I say that this part, like the Rama mentions, a lot of things in Eve. One second. Rama mentions a lot of things in Eve are hidden. You see, I would say that the reason why this is written this way is to hide this argument from the Hamon. You see, yes, because it looks like Eve almost gives in when you just look at it superficially. It looks like he's saying the Rishayim are destroyed and everything, but it's not really true. You see, he's not really giving in. The subtlety in reading this text is to discover one thing, that he does not say that the tzaddik has a good. That's the point. You see? That's the point. But this was really his argument. His argument was that philosophically, the Russia, I'm not saying that each person should be a Russia, by no means. But that he's a tzaddik and that he's going to have a good life, that I don't see.
Shouldn't that be the order for a person to live a good life, though?
What?
Shouldn't that be the order?
What for? The order is as follows. The order is that first he mentions the greatness of God, which he doesn't. He says, I want you to know what my opinion is. The greatness of God I not only don't deny, but I recognize to a higher degree than you do. Living a just life, I also agree, for a different reason. See, I agree because of a different reason. But I also maintain that living a just life is the correct decision. You see, he's summing up what his philosophy is. Okay, hold on. Since his life is dependent upon changing reality, so you'd have to have God change that reality, and that isn't true. That's what it means. God is near as Christ. You understand what I'm saying?
God being reality.
Yeah. No, God. No. To succeed in His way, it requires a change of reality, and God will not do that for him. Is God going to do that for him? God wouldn't do it for anybody. That's what I said. We maintain that a bala tar messiah ourselves. We also maintain that now that if a person does do the good for the good sake, that then God will make the situation such that he will be helped by it. Mm-hmm. Insofar as doing the good, you're supposed to do the good for its own sake. But if you do that, then God will help you to achieve that good. Right? That's the whole idea of the brachas and the klolos. As the Rambam explains, the brachas and the klolos in the Torah. If you follow God, you do the right thing for its own sake. Then God will take away all the tiredness, so you'll be able to get more involved in the good. You see? His question was that really, Levi started the question was that isn't it true that a person should really do the good for its own sake? So we said yes, he should do the good for his own sake. But we know also that if a person does it for his own sake, that God will help him. And the fact that God will help him gives him more impetus to more desire to do the good. And it's not for another reason. It's not that God's going to give him another reward, but God will help him accomplish what he is trying to do for its own sake. You understand what I mean? It's not that because he knows that God is going to help him that he's going to be doing it for another reason. It's not that God's going to give him another reward. God's going to help him in what he's doing. So he's still doing it for its own sake, and he knows he has more of a desire to do it. You see, more of a cheshi to do it because he knows that he can be successful. He will be successful. Okay.
Right.
Again, when he says this is a portion of Pasuk Gimel, he says. He says it's a portion of. Take a look. You see, the Matzus is very nice. Rasslam is Zechela Karasha Hamo Lamata Em Reisim Haloi Gami Shmur Em Kael Lavi Lav Emtzos Hama Arocha Kasha Shmur Lavi Latzadik Veim Ki Arasha Meusad Li Badon and Efesh Balam and Etzriim Kose Ode Bchayev Mikra Echad Lavi Latzadik Kilo Yinotzel Gamhu Mis Misibos Hama Arocha. He says it's all, when he says from God, it doesn't mean it's a direct result of God. Look at the Masudas. It means it's an indirect result of God. That this is the way the Russia is going to be. Russia will be destroyed.
No, it's
God set up the world this way.
Right.
It doesn't mean that God directly is involved.
Will,
that's right, exactly.
Okay.
There's one more thing I wanted to mention. I left out of Eve's argument. What Eve says, where Eve speaks about how great God is in the Pasuk Chavav, and then he ends off and he says, but who knows? He says, V'ram v'ros of Miyis Bonon. He said, that's really an answer to the fact that they said to him, they said that you see there's a celestial order, so therefore that's an order in regard to human justice. There Eve questioned. He says, that we don't have enough knowledge to make that deduction. Because who knows how God works? It's true that God does not work with any disorder, that we see. But whether our little lives come under this order of his is another question altogether. You see? That we have no right to. That's Miyis Bonon. That's why he says Miyis Bonon. The Gemara says in Brachos, we mentioned that the person has conflicts, and that causes a great part of human misery. The Gemara says in Brachos, La'olam lo nivra olam haza, ela oy bishvil tzadikim gemurim, oy bishvil rishayim gemurim. The bainim get killed. That's what the Gemara says. Yeah. And that's what Yom HaChavah tell. So A.B. asked, he said, since we say there's conflict, so then it comes out that a Russia, a Gomor, should have a good life. That's what the Gemara says. The Russia Gomor really doesn't have any conflict. If he's a Russia Gomor. But, however, insofar as achieving his reality, there he's going to get caught.
Yeah.
But the Gemara means the Russia Gomor, it means that in his day-to-day life, until he gets hit, he'll be okay. Whereas the average man gets hit every day, because every day is in conflict.
Yeah. Because he has his internal.
It basically says, even though I don't see any personal relationship between God and me, nevertheless I say that a person should live ethically, and the only good life is the life in which a person lives, removes himself from the taivas, and lives according to knowledge. See, that's what he says. That's what he says. But nevertheless, this doesn't mean that I recognize a divine providence. Just philosophically, that's what I maintain. That was the last chapter. Okay, 27. Now up to 28. I just want to say like this, that there is, sometimes you have an area which has a gold mine. And then all of a sudden you'll see in a few years it will become desolate. You see? So he says that something, in other words, there's constant change insofar as the earth is concerned. You have a place which is good, and then suddenly it's converted into a place which no man goes by. So there's a constant change. That's the way most of the Farshim learn. Yeah, like there's an area which is very prosperous, and then all of a sudden, like a ghost town, nobody will go by, that's it, it's wiped out. See? So, yeah, right. So it is an interesting thing. But what is it, so what is he trying to, what does he want to bring out? What's the Nimshof in that? Yes, to us it looks absurd. You have a place which is prosperous and thriving, and to us the sensible thing would be that this thing should keep on thriving. But then all of a sudden there's a switch, and it's not, it's gone. So to us it's paradoxical. Hey, why did this happen? Like you mentioned before, right? But to God, there has to, since God, everything that exists in the world is a result of his knowledge, there has to be a reason why this is so. So actually, there is a reason why this is so. And I would say also with relationship to men also, he meant, not just a relationship to places. It's martial, but a relationship to men also. Why is it that this happens to one person, another person, one person so prosperous, all of a sudden, boom, another person is not prosperous, then something good happens to him. You see, switches, changes. The question is to us, we don't understand it. But there definitely is a source of knowledge which would explain this. Because since God acts with wisdom, then there is a source of wisdom which would explain it. Yes? That's a good question. His question is, you see, here he says, like this, in the middle of the paragraph, I think this is the most important part, he says, whence then cometh wisdom? And where is the place of understanding? Seeing it is hid from the eyes of all living and kept close from the fowls of the air. Right? So he says, he seems to say that there is a wisdom there, but he doesn't know the wisdom. Now the question is, how do you know that there's a wisdom there? If you don't know the wisdom, how do you know there's a wisdom there? Right? That's his question. Right? How does he know? Since he says you don't know, he sees, he doesn't see any pattern here. Things are haphazard. Yet he says there is a reason for the pattern. If you see things are haphazard, what right does he have to assume that there's a reason for the pattern? What's the answer? You see, the thing is like this. The thing is that it's just the same thing. Science has the same dilemma. You study nature, and you come up with certain propositions, right? And then the question is, but then all of a sudden you're thrown into chaos. Because you see, hey, one second, if this is the case, then how does everything else work? So why don't you stop? Then you get to your next question. In other words, you make a little pattern, and you see, but just a second, the very basis of this whole thing is in question. And you move on to the next. You keep on moving back and back. You keep on moving further and further. Now the question is, what right do you have to pose the next question? Let's say you should say like this. It's chaotic. The universe is chaotic. Why keep on probing? Why don't you say at any point where you find that things don't work out, you could always say that there is no order here, but there's chaos. You see? What do we do? Even that. What you're saying is it's working with a principle of indeterminability. You see? But indeterminability itself is a principle. It's a principle which you can understand. But why don't I say there's just no principle? I have nothing. Absolutely, just cannot. It's chaotic. There is no principle to explain it. See, that nobody would say. Why? The answer is, because insofar as we approach, every time we see we approach it, we see that there is, we do find some patterns. So we assume, on that basis, we assume that the next step, that we're just missing, yeah, we're missing a point. But the, what? No. So the answer is very simple. The answer is all the knowledge that you've uncovered, everything you've uncovered that you see fits into a pattern, to negate this knowledge, it would be irrational to negate all this knowledge and say that this was just haphazard, you see, against the assumption. In other words, you have a choice. You're going to have to make one or two choices. You're either going to say that it's all haphazard, right? Or else you're going to say that it's all logical and I'm missing a point. Now the point is, if you would say that it's all haphazard, you'd have to say everything that you worked out so far is just haphazard. That's even more irrational. You see? So therefore you know there's something beyond, and yet you don't know what it is. That's the only possible way. Do you know what I'm saying? In other words, a child, for instance, you don't understand it. You're learning through a sugya. Now how do you know this sugya is going to make sense? Maybe the whole Gemara doesn't make any sense. The answer is because you've went through so many blocks that fit right into a pattern. So it would be a wrong assumption to say that nothing fits into a pattern. If you'd have to negate every single blot of Gemara that you had before that fits into a pattern. You have to say that that's all accidentally fits into a pattern, which you can't do. So you'd rather say, the more rational thing to say is that yes, those patterns are correct, but I'm missing a point over here. This also has a pattern. Isn't that the only reason why we assume that there's knowledge? I mean, otherwise the next question, you could always say that there's chaos. The only reason why you assume that there is knowledge is because of your past experience, that things, you'd have to negate your whole past experience of knowledge. Right? The most humble, evil thing the universe lets itself to understand. Of course, so who says it has to? Why does it lend itself to understanding? But anyone who experiences knowledge sees that it does lend itself to understanding. And even though Newton's mechanics was overthrown, but the basic principles, many principles of Newton's mechanics are still correct. The only thing is the framework against which you set them is different. But the basic ideas are correct. Yes. That's basically what he's saying. I mean, there's no question that's what he's saying. He's saying there is real wisdom here, because he says like this. He says, whence then cometh wisdom? And where is the place of understanding? He goes through, God understands the way thereof, and he knoweth the place thereof. For he looketh to the ends of the earth, and seeth under the whole heaven, when he maketh a weight for the wind, and meteth out the waters by measure. He goes through the whole thing. So therefore you see like this. You see that then did he see it and declare it. He established it, yea, and searched it out. So you see, he maintains that everything in the world, all these different details, the way they work out, really, according to God, has a knowledge of it. But the only thing is that we don't. That's what he maintains. But he maintains that there is such a knowledge. Now, why does he maintain that there is such a knowledge? You have to say the reason he maintains that there is such a knowledge is because of the fact that whenever you study the universe, you see insofar as you can, it does lend itself to knowledge. So therefore, my assumption is that there is an answer to the dilemma, but the answer is beyond my comprehension, but not that there is no answer. That's basically what he says. Okay? I mean, you could argue, you could say, no, you come to the other conclusion. But the fact remains that science moves ahead on this premise. All knowledge that man has and everything we have moves ahead on that premise. That's the premise. Can't operate, can't function intellectually without that premise. Like you say, maybe, you know, I don't care if you want to justify it or not, but that's the premise. Okay? It's interesting, though, Agav Orche compares it to the gold. He says that it's much more important than gold, the wisdom. Why does he say, what's the comparison to the gold? So like this, it cannot be valued with the gold of Ophir, with the precious onyx, or the sapphire. Gold and glass cannot equal it. Neither shall the exchange thereof be vessels of fine gold. You see? No mention shall be made of coral or of crystal. Yea, the price of wisdom is above rubies. The topaz of Ethiopia shall not equal it. Neither shall it be valued with pure gold. Why does he give this marshal with gold? A lot of times they find the Torah way. Because gold, you see, gold gives a person the fantasy of happiness. See, the emotions naturally run to the gold, to the money. Why? Because the way his taivas are, the way a man's desires and his passions are, the passions tell a person that if he can satisfy these passions, he's going to be happy. But the fact remains that that's not true. It's just an emotion. See, and just like he sees he's disappointed in the past with these emotions, the truth of the matter is that he will always be disappointed with these emotions. But the comparison, so why the comparison? The comparison is because what those emotions are looking for, they're ultimately looking for the real happiness. That's only with wisdom. See, that's not with gold. That's why it says it cannot be equal to it. The marshal he's making is like this, that the he's talking about the fantasy of gold is something which tells a person that there is going to be his happiness. But the truth of the matter is that that's not where it is. But where is it? It is only with wisdom. See, that's the real... In other words, the goal, the thing that gold is attempting to accomplish can only be accomplished with wisdom. And gold has nothing to do with it whatsoever. See, that's why he says... That's why he gives that mushal. That's why a lot of times the pasuk can find that mushal. Because the mushal is given to the emotional assumption. The emotional assumption that man makes with regard to, is always in regard to the physical, the financial, material. But the real is with wisdom. That's what he says. Okay. But now let's get back to this. That's his marshal, like a Varka. So now what is he saying? So he's saying that there is really knowledge there, but man cannot perceive it. Man cannot perceive it. Yes. He's saying essentially is that emotion that you have towards gold and the way you value it, that emotion is the truth of the matter is that you should have, that the emotion you should have towards wisdom should be 10 times greater than that, because it's just a fantasy. See how... That much knowledge you had. That much knowledge you had that gold doesn't satisfy a person's, that doesn't make a person happy. That much knowledge you had. Over here, he's speaking about the... Why can't man get it? He's saying also over here why man cannot get it. You see? He says, God understandeth the way thereof, and he knoweth the place thereof. What he's saying is, let me get back to this point, I don't want to get sidetracked. What he's saying is that since you see that the whole world lends itself to understanding, and the whole world, the source of the whole world is God, right? So you must say that everything that God does lends itself to understanding. So therefore, every single detail that occurs on the earth, there must be a reason for it. The only thing is that you don't have the knowledge as to why it occurs. Right? So he's saying, but to have that knowledge would be the greatest value. Because then a person would, once he'd have that knowledge, then he'd be able to understand his position in the universe and be able to be happy with it. Correct? But the point is, that knowledge, he says, is unattainable. Why is that knowledge unattainable? Because that knowledge is tantamount to the knowledge of God. That's what he's saying. That's what he's saying. See, that's why he says, yeah, 22 works of error. What does he say? He says, and, go ahead. Read it.
He says, destruction and death say, we have heard a rumor.
And unto man he said, behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom, and to depart from evil is understanding. What does he mean to say? And unto man he said, behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom, and to depart from evil is understanding. What does he mean to say? What kind of statement is this? What does he mean? He means one thing. He means that man can have knowledge of the ethics, but not of the metaphysics. That's what he's saying. See? And unto man he said, behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. And to depart from evil is understanding, which means ethical perfection. And ethical perfection consists of two things. Man's relationship to the universe, to the source of the universe, that's one. And his relationship to his to fellow man. In other words, that's departing from evil is understanding. He says the only thing that's ethical perfection. Essentially, what ethical perfection is, he understands that fear of God means that he recognizes there is a greater source outside of him of knowledge and of the Creator. And he right. And the thing is that insofar as man is concerned, he says there is only one. Man is unfortunate because man can only reach ethical perfection. That's what he says. But metaphysical perfection, to really have metaphysical perfection in terms of knowledge, that's an impossibility. That's what he says. But that metaphysical knowledge will be of the greatest value. Nevertheless, God said to man, this is what he has to be satisfied with, and that's it. That's what the end of the parish is. Basically, that's what he said. He was really Socratic, not Aristotelian. Socrates said that metaphysics, Socrates says expressed such a thing. And real metaphysical knowledge is beyond man's ken. Aristotle, on the other hand, didn't maintain that way. Aristotle accounts of metaphysics. Yeah, thought that man can understand metaphysics. That's basically what he's saying at this point. He says the fear of the Lord. The fear of the Lord means that you don't have any real knowledge of it. It means that you recognize that he is so... Yeah, you recognize that he's there and he's so much greater than you. That's what he means, that God said unto man, he said, the fear of the Lord. He restricted man to the to fear. Fear means that you're awe. You're in a state of awe. But to really comprehend, to really understand them, to understand how things work, that you can't do. Metaphysical limits. Metaphysical limitation. But the real perfection of man is just consists in ethical perfection. That's what he said. The question was raised as to why he thought only ethics. What about physics? Physics to a philosopher has no meaning per se. It's only insofar as it forms the groundwork for a metaphysical superstructure. See, but it, per se, to study an isolated facts have no meaning to it. But that's what he said. Now he says, however, he says that if you would have that knowledge, that would be greater than the person's imagination with regard to gold. Why? Why would it be greater? Because that would finally, then at least he'll be able to rest and be at peace apparently what he's saying is if he would understand exactly how it works, then he would be at peace with himself in spite of his physical afflictions. You see? In spite of his physical afflictions. If he'd be able to understand it and see exactly how it works and why, then he would be able to be at peace. But he can't have that knowledge, so therefore he can't. Interesting statement. That's what he's saying. So, yes.
What does he bring into
the... We said before, it's not exactly Ben Allah Haverim Allah Makom. It means that ethical perfection, which involves overcoming of the passions and recognition of his place. I mean, if he's not realistic with regard to what he is, so then it's an imperfection ethically. Okay? That's the fear of the Lord. Fear of the Lord means the recognition of a... But that's what it is. Okay. Well, if he would have that knowledge, then he would be... Then he'd be at peace. If he'd have the knowledge of how things... of why things are the way they are. Yes. There's only one question, of course. The question is that the Rambam says that Iyuv portrayed Aristotle's view. But over here it would seem that he has reached metaphysical frustration. That's true. The point is, even according to Aristotle, there is no ultimate metaphysical knowledge, like the Rambam mentions. You see, there is no ultimate metaphysical knowledge. So now, how will we get back to Iyuv? The question we're dealing with now is, why will this metaphysical knowledge relieve his pain? That's the question. To elaborate a little more. See, the thing is like this. That whence then cometh wisdom? And where is the place of understanding? What he means, you see, I think what he says is true. If a person has a knowledge, this everything that we see is from the source of the universe, which is God. Now, if you have a knowledge as to the nature of that source, then you can conform your emotions to that nature. You'll say, this is the nature of the source of the universe, so then I can conform my emotions to that nature. But if there is no knowledge of the nature of the source, and you can't possibly attach any type of positive idea to it, then it leads to a state of frustration and pain. You see, that's basically what he's saying. In other words, see, like the Chazal say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sometimes appears like an Ish Mochama. Sometimes he appears like a few mashalim that Allah Yomi was near Kish Mohammed, and then the other places he appeared like something else. And different appearances God has. What it means is that man really can't understand his true nature, and therefore he substitutes these appearances at different times. But there really is an underlying nature which he can't comprehend, and which he can't even relate to in a positive way. And I'll tell you something else. That's really why Yahdus is such a difficult religion, and that's why Avodah Zarah was so accepted. Because in Avodah Zarah, you can relate to some positive type of emotion to the source, you see, in Avodah Zarah. And that's why people follow individuals. Why? Because because if they have, at least they could see something positive. This person is directly related to God, you see. So there is some positive feeling they can have with the relationship to the Creator. That's Avodah Zarah. The true way of Yadus is that you come to the recognition that there is absolutely no way that we could feel, we can conform our feelings to this being who we just do not have any positive idea about. You see, other than that he exists. That's what he says. He says if he would be able to emotionally be able to alleviate the pain, if he can conform to some type of being, conform his ideas to some type of being, but he doesn't know the source. So that's why he's in trouble pain. It's like you said, the mashal you gave was where a person, if a person loses somebody, so he feels the pain. He knows there's an answer. Yeah, but that doesn't help me know there's an answer. Only if he would really be able to see the true answer, then it wouldn't bother him anymore. You see? Then he'd be able to make his emotions conform to the situation. You see? The emotions require a specific knowledge. The emotions require a specific knowledge. What? So therefore, what he's saying is that man is eternally frustrated because he doesn't have any knowledge of the source of the universe. So he can't conform. You would see God's nature. You say there's a being who has such a nature. Now his nature, from his nature, stems everything that we have. He'd be able to understand, see directly how everything stems from that nature and why it has to precisely be that way. See, then there wouldn't be any more pain because he'd say, look, this is the way it is. You have to accept it. The physical pain he can't remove. It's impossible. But the emotional pain, which is the real pain, not the physical pain, the emotional pain, which is the real pain, which results from the inability to comprehend and to understand why he is in such a state, that's the pain he is.
Yeah,
what is 29? What is 29? 29 is a beautiful parrot. He's saying how much more pleasurable life was when he was living in this small world where he was a righteous person. And he just, everything he did, he had the feeling of righteousness and justice, and everything he did correctly, you see? But that feeling was so great, at least he had such tremendous pleasure. Whereas now, when he threw that all away, because he saw what happened to him, and he couldn't accept this divine providence anymore, so once he threw that away, you see, he's left empty in a world, in a state of metaphysical frustration, a state in which he has nothing to hang on to. He's going back to how much more pleasurable life was when he was in his ignorant state, in the previous state, you see? Where everything he did was he had the feeling that God was with him in everything he did, you know what I mean? It's a beautiful description of the enjoyment of the, you have a person who feels and senses religiosity, just senses his own religiosity, you know what I mean? His own firmness. Yeah. Tremendously happy. Everything is just, he's the way he says, like he says, there was over there. And I broke the jaws of the unrighteous and I plucked the prey out of his teeth. Everything he did was, he could feel that he's working for justice. That certain sense that he's, that enjoyment that comes from a person feeling that he is a just man and working for righteousness. John Brown type of thing. That's your question. It says he has cast me into the mire and I have become like dust and ashes. But if you maintain, according to the Rambam, if you maintain Aristotle's metaphysical concept that there is no such thing as divine providence, right? There's no such thing as Hashgacha. So how can you say God cast him into the mire? The answer is there's two ways that he can cast him. He can cast him directly and simply because of the system that he created. Doesn't mean he directly cast him. You know what I mean? Yeah, because of the system. Because of the system. What? The complaint is that still the world is created in this way in which a good man could fall down like that. You have to understand one thing. He says over here, he says, if I walked with vanity, the first thing, and my foot has hasted to the sea, even though it wasn't vanity, in other words, even though he was happy, the feeling of satisfaction of being with God is not the same thing as vanity. You know what I mean? You have to understand that. I mean, the feeling of being satisfied with a certain religious emotion, a certain religious feeling, isn't the same thing as vanity. Vanity means haughtiness. He wasn't haughty. On the contrary, he was a very humble person. He recognized that he has to work humbly. But he had the satisfaction of walking with God. That's what he talks about before, how good that was to have that satisfaction. You see? It wasn't a haughtiness, really. You know, it wasn't like an ego trip is it wouldn't be described really as an ego trip is more where the person is overwhelmed with himself, is carried away with himself. He just had that quiet satisfaction that he's doing the right thing, but it wasn't a certain haughtiness that he feels he's bigger than other people, greater than other people, that on the contrary. That would be wrong. Yeah. And a warmth, right? So first he says he didn't have vanity. Then he says he didn't follow his sensual, his eyes. Then he says, if my heart has been enticed unto a woman, and I have lain in wait at my neighbor's door, you see, that's the basic base taiva, right? That's basically what he's saying, correct? Yeah. So then and what's the next thing? What's the basic between looking with his eyes and between the other one? It's interesting. He has that breakdown, both. The eyes and the heart. What?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the eyes, really is the first thing. First thing the eyes see, and then he goes after it emotionally.
So the question would be, then maybe you should say stop at the eyes. In other words, why? There's two types of taiva. There's a taiva in which the emotion has a grip on a person, and then the eyes is where a person, there is a taiva to get involved in the taiva. Do you know what I mean? There's two steps, really. The first step is where the person, when a person sees something, he says, oh, that's something, that I want to get involved, I want to have that emotion. The second time is when he's under the influence of the emotion. He says, either one he didn't, he never felt for, he never felt for. Because you can't predict which is going to come first. It doesn't always work. At first, sometimes an emotion, you just grab you, an emotion in the moment. He says, in either case, I was perfected. Because I never allowed my eye, if I saw that there was an emotion involved over here, I didn't follow it. And if the emotion had a grip on me, I didn't do it either. See, that's why you have the two breakdowns over there. Emotion, that's if my heart has been enticed unto a woman. He says, for that were a heinous crime. He says, yea, it were an iniquity to be punished by the judges, for it is a fire that consumeth unto destruction. So he recognized that it's a fire, he means an emotion, a real powerful emotion, and that he wouldn't let that take hold of him. He was able to avoid to have any of those powerful emotions take over. What was next? If I did despise the cause of my manservant, what does that mean? So that means that he was able, that he never looked down at a person who was in a lower status than him. You see? Okay, yeah. Interesting. Or my maidservant when they contended with me. He didn't look down, if a person argued with him, he didn't look down at his status and say, who are you to argue with me? See? He listened carefully to the argument. That's the, that's a sign of his humility. Go ahead further. See what he says? He says, did not he that made me the womb make him? How could I say that inherently I am greater than him? That's a status is artificial. The truth of the matter is they were both parts of God. This status is an artificial thing. He recognized that. I mean, this parrot is fantastic. He goes through every single type of perfection. Go further.
Did not one
fashion us in the womb? In reality, we're both the same. Go ahead.
If I ever
held back from, this is more than, this was a chesed. In other words, whatever poor person needed, he never withheld, because of his own greed, he would never withhold something from a poor person. On the contrary, when I have to make sure he had everything needed. Go further. Listen to this. He says, if I have made gold my hope, and have said to the fine gold, thou art my confidence. So even though he had money, but he knew that's not his security. That's an unbelievable thing. Even though he had it. The Pasuk in Mishlei says the other way. Pasuk in Mishlei says, that the stronghold of a wealthy man is his wealth. As I said, it says, because the wealthy man is a person who has fought all his life to have the wealth, and therefore this is his fortress. His fortress is wealth. Here he says the opposite. Even though he had wealth, he said, but he never. He says, if I have made gold my hope, if I rejoice because my wealth was great. He didn't even rejoice. That's the way it is. He didn't feel any different than he was if he was a pauper. That's an unbelievable level to reach. It's an unbelievable. He's describing the level that he was on before. Unbelievable.
Go ahead.
Yeah, we're 723. That's Yerusha Mayim. That's the right thing. Yeah, terrible, because he recognizes the Creator. That's right. Correct. If I rejoice at the destruction of him that hated me, he never was happy. That's a hard one. Or exalted when evil found him. Person, that's a very hard thing. For a person to see somebody else who is his enemy be destroyed, and not to feel, not to feel any form of exaltation. I mean, that's, you go around, you visit different, see different situations, different communities, even in the Torah world. Ah, boy, he's got it now. One against the other. That feeling, that's a high level. Not to even sense, not to even feel that if his enemy falls, to feel an exaltation. That's a tremendous level. Tremendous love. What? It's a base emotion. It's a base emotion. Your own. Of course. In the fear of the multitudes, he didn't care about honor. The contempt of families didn't terrify him. Which means to say that no amount of pressure could cause him to deviate from the true ethical norm. See, that's an unbelievable level. Yeah, no matter how much the multitudes and the families, this one, he was completely objective. Unbelievable level, yeah. That was the last point. The last part was he summarized his justice, and he showed the level that he was on, and therefore he said, if some evil could befall me, then definitely there cannot be any Ashgacha. He winds up, that's the end of his words. Because what he does is, in the end, he just shows, here's the experiment. I was the living experiment. Here's the man who was completely righteous, and yet look what happened to him. Therefore, it came to this conclusion that there cannot be any Hashgacha. That's the end of his words. Okay. Now, the other thing. This parak describes perfection. This is an important parak to know. Description of what perfection is. And then you have Maria Nevuah, the Kodesh Baruch Hu's answer to Ehev. All right, this, of course, is the most difficult part of the whole Ehev. Now, up till now, if somebody would want to say, if we want to review Ehev up till now in like one or two sentences, what would you say? How would you review it? What would be the... what basically is Ehev up till this point?
Faithful.
The phenomenon of Ehev himself. The phenomenon of Ehev without any philosophy. Simply stated, what is Ehev? What is Ehev? Ehev means one thing. Ehev is an experiment. Ehev is an experiment. As a matter of fact, there's those that hold that Ehev lehervle and nevrela mashaloya. Mashaloya means that it's a hypothetical case, but it's not stam a crazy something which is not possible. It means that it is something, a mashal, which can occur. Question is whether this man actually lived or not. That's another question. But whether he lived or not doesn't really matter. Because the point is, it is whatever it is either something which has occurred or something which could occur. If I say mashal haya, it means that it is something which could occur. You see, if I say it happened, you lived, so of course something which did occur. But either case doesn't matter. What is it? What is the experiment that they're discussing? What is it? It means one thing. It means that a person can be a case in which a person tries to do his utmost according to religious law, according to all the requirements of the Torah, and he lives 100% in accordance to as much as he can. He tries as much as he can, and yet the result is that what? That he suffers unbelievable torment. Result. That's the result. That's if somebody asks you to summarize what Ehev is, that's what Ehev is. Because you see, that's why none of those answers were any good. Those answers, when it says the way the Sefer goes, you see that all the answers were no good. That's why in the end it says that God said to his friends, he was angry at the friends of Ehev. Why? He says he didn't speak rightly with Ehev. Yeah, that's what he is. That's right. And it was so that after the Lord has spoken these words unto Job, the Lord said to Eliphaz the Temanite, my wrath is kindled against thee and against thy two friends, for ye have not spoken of me the thing that is right, as my servant Ehev has. Kilo dibartem elai nechoina ka'avdi Ehev. See? So Kodesh Baruch Hu criticized them for not answering properly. What was their answer? Their answer all along was that Ehev was a chayte. You see, you didn't try, you didn't do it, and not enough. All these are the answers. And God says, no, that's not right. Ehev was right. So with that being the case, what if you want to summarize Ehev, you have to say that it is possible for a person to try to live. Doesn't mean it always happens, but it's possible for a person to try to live according to his utmost, in line with every religious, ethical, moral doctrine that he knows. Try his utmost, and nevertheless, he will encounter unbelievable yisurim. Unbelievable Yisurim, it's Yisura Ehev. That's the phenomenon of Ehev. If you want to summarize it concisely, that's what it is. That's basically what it is. It's an unbelievable phenomenon.
So why does the Rambam reject Yisurim Shel Avva? Isn't that what they're trying to claim it is?
I want to say